I am James Johnson of the Afro-American Educators Association, interviewing Mr. Arthur S. Collins of 111 Coach Light Square, Bridgeport, Connecticut, on Wednesday, December the 29th, 1982, at 1:08 p.m. Well, Mr. Collins, I want to express my appreciation on behalf of the organization for letting me come into your home to interview you. The purpose of this interview is to collect information on Black history in and around Bridgeport. So I think a good beginning would be as to where you were born, when you were born, and also some background about your parents. Well, where were you born, Mr. Collins?
I was born in Washington, D.C., 1897, on L Street Northwest.
How many children did you have in the family?
In my family, I had two brothers and one sister.
Well, where are they now, Mr. Collins?
Well, both of my brothers are dead. My sister is still alive. She was, she lives in Pittsburgh. She has a son, a neurologist. I think he's the first Negro neurologist in that state.
I see. What is her name?
His name is Dr. Eugene Young.
I see.
My sister's name was Gertrude Young. Her husband was a doctor. He was in charge of the Lincoln State Hospital in Lincoln, West Virginia. So he died. My sister sold the home there and moved to Pittsburgh, where her son was located. He had quite a thriving practice there, and he was head of the, I think it's the neurology department of that hospital in Pittsburgh.
I see.
And he did quite a thriving business.
That's good. That's good. Where were your parents from? Your
my mother parents, father? Now, my mother was from Charleston, North Carolina.
Charleston, North Carolina.
I think it is Charleston. Charleston's in North Carolina, isn't it?
There is a Charleston in South Carolina.
Well, I think she's from, well, she was from Charleston.
Charleston, South Carolina.
South Carolina.
All right. Now, what about your father?
My father was from Lawrenceville, Virginia. That's where he was born, where Dr. Russell's school is.
I see.
I can tell you a little history about that school. Because every summer, we used to go to Lawrenceville. That was my father's home.
I see.
And we used to go out into the country to visit relatives. And I remember when that school was nothing but little red barns. Mm-hmm. When the beginning of it, it was originated by Dr. Russell, I think that was his name.
Let's see. And the name
and, it's like today, it's the college. It's called, in Lawrenceville, Virginia now, it's called St.
Paul's?
St. Paul.
Paul's Episcopal.
St. Paul Episcopal College. Mm-hmm. I remember when there was just little red barns at the beginning of it.
I
Dr.
See.
Russell was the originator of it.
I see.
See? Uh-huh. And so when I hear of different students that the family knows that attended that institution, it carries me back to the background of it.
I see.
See? Uh-huh. And that's one point.
Yeah.
Okay. And on that line. And because my uncle, he was the ran the grocery store there, the, what you call the village store. And as I say, we used to visit there from Washington when we were kids, my brother and I, every summer.
I see. Yes.
And the first time I ever, and he used to slaughter his cattle right next to his house.
I see.
And I used to think it was the cruelest thing to see him take an axe and hit a cow in the head or cut a pig's throat, you know, things like that. That was all new to me.
I see.
And so, as I say, Lawrenceville, Virginia was the home of my father.
I see.
And
what were their occupations? What kind of work did your parents do?
My father, he was worked in the Bureau of Statistics in Washington. And my mother, she was a housewife. Back in them days, a woman's place was in the home. the man wore the pants.
did your parents own their home?
No, we rented.
Rented.
Well, I tell you, back in those days, too many people owned their homes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them rented. Rents were cheap, and
about how much?
Well, you could get a home for rent a house for about $25 a month. Mm-hmm. See, and I mean beautiful homes, nice homes, you know.
Yes.
No, was no junk.
I see.
Some of them had nice lawns and like that, you know. But in those days, wages were low, and everything in general was cheap on account. Like in groceries and like that, you know, you could get a pound of butter, say, for about 39 cents.
Yes.
And you're going to get something, you're going to get live about 10 cents a pound.
Yeah.
But anyhow, things were according to salaries, you know, people made. And in those days, Washington was always known as a society town. Mm-hmm. Most of the people there, all that background, you know, like the Douglases. And my shorthand teacher was from the background of Frederick Douglass.
I see.
And we used to, people judged you in those days on what your parents did.
Yes.
See, when I say society town, now when I was young, we used to go to see the young girls, you know, in school. They used to, first thing the parents want to know, who are your folks?
Yes, yes.
That's
yes,
the first thing you want to know,
yes,
who are your folks?
Yes,
you know,
yes.
So, and like that.
I see.
But everybody mostly, it was a college town, Howard University was located there. And most of the work there was government work. It was three distinct groups, I might say, when I say society.
Yes.
If you went to a dance or something like that, they didn't have to have a policeman at the door and said, you can't come in here.
Yes.
Now they had several halls there. One was named the True Reforms Hall, which was at 12th and U Street in Washington, and they had the Oddfellows Hall and like that. Now they had one probably in the hall, that have the main auditorium, and they have two other rooms, and if wasn't something undesirable came there, and looked in, you didn't, the policeman didn't have to tell him, you don't belong. And he looked in there, and he knew he didn't belong there, so he said he must be up in room 5.
Yes.
Or room 10.
Yes.
You know, like that.
I see.
So, I remember such incidents when I first went to commercial school, Cortez Peters, which was the champion typist of the country in those years. Do you remember?
I've heard of him, yes.
Yeah. My first year in commercial school was, he was in his senior year. This is just an incident.
Yes, all right.
And he was over there and he was just carrying away, you know, bling, 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 bling. So many words a minute like that, you know. And we had just come into to the commercial school. And of course, one of my subjects was typewriting and like a commercial course and bookkeeping and converting a little commercial law and things like that, you know. And so it amazed us, you know.
This is what we would call high school now. The commercial school, would that be
it? It was a high school, but
yes.
It was the commercial.
Commercial high school.
Commercial high school.
High school.
Yeah. Okay. So we used to admire, you know, because he was in his senior year. And in those years, they didn't have the standard of typewriter with the touch system that they have today.
Yes.
They had Remington, the Monarch, and such typewriters, the Smith, and you had to almost hit them with your fist almost, you know, to make you carry it. But as I was getting back to the point of Cortez Peters, we were just starting like learning the alphabet, you know, like Q, W, R, E, R, T, Y, U, I, O, P. Shift the carriage, you know,
yes.
And like that, you know, learning the keyboard.
I see.
And he was just going to town.
Were there many blacks taking commercial courses?
Well, I tell you, Washington, it was a segregated school. The whole system was a segregated system.
I see.
See, in Washington, it was the whole school system was segregated.
I see.
It wasn't mixed.
I see.
Like in Cullen, like in Bridgeport here, you know, when I first came here, and it's still it's not a segregated system here.
I see. How was your elementary education? What grade did you start in school?
I started from the very beginning. I started as from the first grade.
I see.
Like that was the
How many elementary grades they had
12 elementary grades, mm-hmm. And from there you went first to high school.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
4 years high school,
mm-hmm.
Yes, and then from there you could go to college. See, mm-hmm. And in those days, in the medical division, you could go right from high school and take pharmacy. Mm-hmm. See, and you didn't have to take, and you didn't have to take a pre-med course for MD.
Yes, sir.
See, mm-hmm. Things were a little different, easier than in those days, you know. And of course. Washington was always known as a intellectual city because Howard University was there, and most everybody either worked in the government jobs, you know. There was no factories or anything there. Most as I say, it was all clean work, you know, like that. And
how was your social life? Were there any restrictions from your
parents?
Well,
now, I'll tell you, that social life, that's what I'm getting to. Washington was known as a society town. There were might as well say, three social groups. Backgrounds were different. There was the medical profession that they had their group, and there was the government, people that worked in the government, and then there was the teachers, you know, like that.
See,
they weren't, as I say, you weren't exactly divided, but you had to be in that circle, as I say, when we were young kids, when they go to see the young girls. The first thing the parents want to know, who you are, who your folks, and like that, you mm-hmm. know.
Yes.
And so it was quite different. When I left Washington when I was 19, and I came to Stratford was the first place I came.
Well, why did you leave Washington? Why did your parents leave Washington?
I tell you, my parents never left Washington.
Hmm.
No, my parents never left Washington. They died in Washington. I left Washington when I was around 19. It was during the First World War. Mr. Jefferson from up in Bridgeport here, they sent down to Washington during the summer months, you know, when school's out, to bring up a group to clean trolley cars here in Bridgeport.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in Washington, because I worked in a drugstore, soda jerking work, and waiting on, you know, like that. And in the summer, and in the winter time, got about $2 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summertime, $5 a week. Well, mm-hmm. that was a lot of money, you
yes,
know.
Yes.
And you could go around Washington all the week with $5
yes.
in
yeah.
your pocket.
Right.
And so we came here, to make a long story short. A bunch of school had closed, mm-hmm. and then First World War, they sent this Mr. Jefferson down to Washington through Reverend Wiseman. To pick some fellows, you know, like they leave.
Yes.
Away, he used to go to Lenox City to work after school,
yes.
and like that,
yes.
you know, to come up to to clean cars at the car bar.
Here in Bridgeport?
In Bridgeport. Right.
Now this Reverend Wiseman, was he in
Bridgeport? He was in Washington.
I see. He was the person that Mr. Jefferson
he
contacted.
He was a friend, Mr. Jefferson.
I see.
And so we came, a bunch of us came here and worked for the car bar and 7 days a week. And we got $14 a week, and we thought that was the public debt. So when they wanted to hold back 2 days, then that was it, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, but anyhow, that was a lot of money for us just leaving Washington,
yes,
you know, and when you in school, you know, too, and making that kind of money, but it was 7 days a week.
Yes. How long did you work at that job?
Well, I tell you, in those days, and we worked at that job, we got our transportation free and like that, and I say probably 3 or 4 months, you would shift around and get the jobs here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make one point clear, that in the industrial field in Bridgeport, if you didn't have no dirty work for you to do or any sweeping to do, there was no word for you. Mm-hmm. See, you can name on one hand the color that held responsible positions in the industrial one I knew personally, he was a boss electrician. See, he was colored. And he had, working under him, his assistant was a white man. Well, this Eiley Kearney was the name of the boss electrician. He was colored.
Yes.
Yeah. And it wasn't set up there then. Somebody that knew you or thought well of you, a white man, had to put you there.
Yes.
You just couldn't have, if you were, here's a man that's one of the best electricians in Bridgeport, than any white or any other.
I see.
But you just couldn't go and apply for a job as an electrician, because mm-hmm. you was colored. Mm-hmm. And this white fella, that was his assistant, when Mr. Kearney died, he became a boss and he never hired a colored man.
I see.
See? That is in the industrial mm-hmm. end of it.
I see.
But Bridgeport, mostly the work here in those days, was domestic mm-hmm. for the people, you know. But there were decent people.
So. I see.
But the opportunity just wasn't there. Mm-hmm. It's not like it is today in the 60s when things began, Martin Luther King and everything moved up, mm-hmm. that the banks hired any colored, or the big department stores. You could run accounts here, spend all the money you want, but you couldn't buy a cup of coffee in their restaurant. They wouldn't serve you. Mm-hmm. See, that was the way the setup here. It isn't like it was in the 60s when things began to break a little.
I see.
You didn't see colored girls working in the banks mm-hmm. like they do today, or in the big department stores behind the counter. You know, like that was the way to go on people. It was entirely different. And as I say, I worked in several factories. But as I say, if it wasn't no dirty work for you to do, you know, no sweeping or nothing like that to do, well, there was no job. Because that was the... That was for the color, that yes. type of work.
Yes.
See. And not casting any aspersions on the type of people that lived here. During the First World War, a lot of them just began to make enough money to start buying their homes.
Yes.
See.
Yes.
Which most all of them lost when the Depression came.
Yes.
A lot of people around here that should have been putting their money in the bank was buying stock when they should have been putting the money in the bank was buying stock on through the brokers, you know.
Stock market, Wall Street?
No. They're from around
the stock broker?
Stock brokers like that, you know. Uh-huh. And they weren't making but so much. And they should have been putting that in the bank.
Are these black people that you're talking
these
about?
These are black people.
They were investing in stocks at that time?
Yeah. Buying stock on margin, that's what I want to say.
All right.
Buying stock on margin, see? Mm-hmm. Monies that they should have been putting in the bank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, when the crash came, the brokers closed in on them. And those who had homes, and a lot of them hadn't been paid for, were taken from them. They lost them, see. Mm-hmm. And around through the 60s, I think you had the Martha Luther King, things began to break a little. Mm-hmm. Then they started employing colored in the department stores as sales girls and sales, you know, men, and also in the factories after Japan jumped them, that's it, after Japan mm-hmm. jumped them, mm-hmm. then things opened up a little, you know, and so in the factories, in the industrial departments, they began to hire more colored.
I see.
In decent jobs, you know. They weren't just, you just couldn't, if you had a trade, you just couldn't go and apply for it. Mm-hmm. A few of them got to go, you know, but they had to have someone mm-hmm. in that organization that knew you. He had to be white, too, mm-hmm. to put you there. Mm-hmm. See, that's how a lot of them got there. And we didn't have back in those days, like a colored superintendent in school, like Mr. Johnson, did you remember?
Yes.
We didn't have, wasn't nothing like that open for color. You could go to a business school and they wouldn't even accept you, I mean, if you applied. Because mm-hmm. most business schools in those days, they, after you had finished the course, then they were guaranteed to find you a job, to place you, you know. So therefore, the colored never had the opportunity to go to some of these industrial schools, you know. Of course, they knew darn well they couldn't, had no place to put them, you know. They couldn't place them like whites. And, getting back now, I'm doubling back. So some of the prominent people that I knew coming along and came in contact with, just like I'm talking to you. One was Claude Hopkins.
The orchestra leader? Was that Claude Hopkins?
Hopkins, and
the
his father was a professor of music at